Investing Simplified is brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisory firm. Price Financial Group has been doing estate planning since 1970 and investment and retirement planning since 1975. Individual situations may vary, and the information on this show should only be relied upon when coordinated with individual professional advice. Other parties present on this broadcast are not affiliated with Price Financial Group Wealth Management. Investing Simplified is the longest-running live financial program with a certified financial planner, estate planning attorney, and a certified public accountant to answer your questions for free. Got a tough estate, tax, or financial problem keeping you up at night? You can call the show right now at 503-222-9700. That's 503-222-9700. Long distance and podcast listeners can call toll free at 800-344-5836. Coming to you live from Portland, Oregon, and broadcast on affiliated stations throughout the Pacific Northwest. Now, here's the host of Investing Simplified, Bo Caldwell.
We do Investing Simplified.
Welcome into Investing Simplified. However you're listening, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for making us a part of your day. I really appreciate you all being here. I know that I've gotten a lot of feedback that we appreciate being on the air, and it's a pleasure to be still talking to you. I am hopeful, I am cautiously optimistic that soon we will be able to get Kevin and Taylor back on the show to bring their unique perspectives, both from the tax perspective and the estate planning perspective. I want to give a shout out to Taylor as she just had her second child, a girl child here born just a couple of weeks ago. And so she's doing quite well. It's a crazy time to be having children here in the coronavirus pandemic as it continues to go on. But I am planning on hopefully having Kevin on via phone next week so we can answer some tax questions, talk about some of the different tax items as people wonder how we're going to be affected tax-wise while working from home or having to work from home. As a reminder also, we do post the show as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts, on Apple Music, on Apple Podcasts, on Google Play, Spotify, those various things. And if you want to listen to the show as well, we do put all past shows online at investingsimplifiedradio.com. We're going to be setting up an email here soon to take questions from listeners, so folks want to send in the questions. But right now, until we have a specified email set up, we are taking questions to my email, which is bo@pfgwm.com. Or you can post that question on investingsimplifiedradio.com, where that's where we do sort of the chat questions. And I try to answer those questions via chat as well, but also post them on here on the show. If there's something that's been keeping you up at night or something that's been bugging you, there really is no bad question. There's no foolish question when it comes to your money, to your taxes, or to your estate planning, because what you don't know can hurt you. It's worth mentioning as well, if you visit our website, www.pfgwm.com, we have a couple of good, really good reports on there that we can run for you that kind of give you an idea of where you're at, because we have been riding this roller coaster. I tell you what, folks, just to start this year has been a year to start unlike any we've seen. The market was at all-time highs. It quickly drops 37% in a month, in less than a month. That's a crazy, crazy dip down, and then it's bounced back since. And the market has moved in ways that just boggle the mind. We have unemployment numbers hitting just astronomical amounts, and that's not even including the people who couldn't apply because the system is so overwhelmed. The jobless claims, the number of unemployed going on per week is insanely higher than it was during the financial crisis. And yet when those numbers come out, the market goes up. And then you have things where the news comes out, the news is driven, where we have good news coming out about coronavirus cases. We have good news about therapeutics and about a vaccine and different things, and the market goes down. Or we have good news, as we did this week, that the Gilead Sciences remdesivir drug appears to be effective against the virus when we're talking about folks that are at really high risk, and so the market goes up. But we have these huge swings to start the year, huge movements in the market, these 5-6% movements in a day, which is just incredible. And then now we've sort of backed our way down to more of the boring movements of 1 or 2%, right? And it seems like when we get a day where we're moving less than a percent, you know, our market barely moves at all, that just now has become boring when we talk about the market. But I've talked to a lot of folks that haven't been able to weather this, that they're looking at their statements. Your statement is coming out from March that shows maybe you lost 10%, maybe you, if you were more conservative, maybe you lost 20%, maybe you lost 30% in the month of March as the market dragged down. And that can be a bit of a shock. And if that amount of movement in the market, that amount of movement in your plan is too much for you to handle, then it's entirely possible that the problem is not what you're invested in. The problem is not the market. The problem is your exposure to risk, the amount of risk that you're willing to take. Because even when we start talking about less risky items, we start talking about people say, well, I could go all into bonds, right? I could buy bonds because bonds are safer than stocks. And I've talked about this before and I mention it again. Bonds are historically less volatile than stocks and historically are safer than stocks, but they are not perfectly safe. The only thing that is perfectly safe is cash. If you're holding cash, because even if you're holding treasuries, which are very safe and, you know, have lower fluctuation, again, lower volatility than stocks, treasuries are bonds that are issued by our government. And they continue to be issued more and more as the debt goes up, right? As the government just starts printing money in order to pay all these outlays, you know, pay for the bazooka, as it's so called, that the Fed has done for the market. But if you own individual treasuries or individual bonds and you're holding them to maturity, then yeah, it's paying a stable interest rate. And if you're holding a treasury from the U.S. government, I can't think of anything that I could that is more stable, that I trust more to pay it eventually. They may just issue more debt in order to pay my debt that they owe me, but still. But the thing about it is bonds operate in an inverse relationship to interest rates. So if you owned bonds, interest rates go down, the Fed drives interest rates down, the price on your bonds go up. And if you're holding that bond to maturity, if you have a specific issue of a bond that you're holding till maturity, it doesn't matter that the price is fluctuating up and down because you're holding it for the long term. You're holding it till it's going to come due, and then you're going to get your principal back, and you're going to clip your interest coupon the whole way. Feels pretty good. But if you're in a bond fund, and here's the rub, if you're in a bond fund in your 401k, in the TSP, if you're a government employee, in your 403B, if you are in a bond fund and interest rates go up, the price on those bonds goes down. And the thing about a mutual fund, folks, it's different than that individual bond. Those money managers who are managing that bond fund have to stand ready to meet redemption. So when people start selling their shares of that mutual fund, the bond fund managers may not have enough cash to meet those redemptions. And then, therefore, they have to start selling those bonds, right? So they have to start selling some of those bonds, maybe at a loss. And so that trickles down to you. And right now, with fixed income interest rates being so low, unless you are a trader or you are working with a money manager who does trade in those bonds, it's really hard to find a good return in bonds as, you know, as things go down, right? We're really seeing a lot of folks not realize that they may have more risk than they planned on, because to the start of this year, bonds have fluctuated a lot more than they have fluctuated in the past. So really the conversation may have to drive around how much risk are you willing to take? But it's a trade-off, folks, because when you talk about being low risk, whether that's in the bonds because they're lower risk, or whether you talk about being in treasuries or in cash, you can't have your cake and eat it too, to use a silly idiom. But if you're taking low risk in order to avoid the downswing, so if you are, we're talking about having, looking out for minimizing the drawdown that your portfolio has, and you were looking and saying, hey, the market was down 30% last month and I was only down 10. That's great. That is something to write home about. But when the market rips back 12% in a week, as it did last week, when the market rips back to gain back 50% of the losses that it had, you can't expect to go up with 100% of the market if you're not willing to go down with 100% of the market. So it comes back to setting your expectations for the roller coaster that you want to ride. If you're willing to take those risks, there can be a lot of opportunity. Even still, I think there's a lot of opportunity in the market in individual companies and good companies that you can buy on sale. I don't think that means you just go out and turn risk on right now. The other thing to think about is even if you missed out on when the quote-unquote bottom was, if you have a long-term perspective and you're an investor, you can buy in and still get good returns on a risk-adjusted basis. But the key is that phrase, risk-adjusted basis. Because you got to make sure that you are following your risk tolerance and you are looking at it in context. Because if you're buying the S&P 500 index fund, if you're buying, we'll use SPY, right, which is iShares S&P 500 price tracking ETF, then yeah, you should be doing just about what the S&P does minus the 5 or 6 basis points that it costs to run the ETF. So if the market's up 10, you should be up 9.95%, right? But then when the market's down 10, you should expect to be down 10.05. And if you cannot put that in context, then maybe you need to speak to somebody about how to put it in context. And the other thing to think about when you're talking about investing and really what you're looking at long term is not just the actual return of the portfolio on a point to point. Because again, remember, folks, if you're up 12, you're up 15, if you haven't sold, you're not up yet. The price of what you own is up, but you're not up because you haven't actually sold at the height. Just like if you're down 10 or down 15, you're not actually down until you sell. That's where the price of it is. But until you sell and move out, you're not down yet. But the pure price movement of your investments is not necessarily the most important piece. The most important piece is what's your plan? And is that plan for retirement income? Is that plan to double your money in 10 years? Is that plan to shoot the lights out with record performance in the market? It all depends on what your overall plan is and what you need to do to get there. So if your plan involves having a very steady, eddy, slow-growing portfolio that's not taking a lot of risk, then it really doesn't matter what's happening in the market when the market's straight up or the market's down. Because as long as you're progressing towards your long-term goals, that's the biggest thing. So that's the hard thing for people to understand and to contextualize, and one of the things that a financial advisor can help you with. So call your financial advisor if you're working with somebody. If you're not working with somebody and want to see how that looks, call us, 503-253-3000. We're happy to talk about what that looks like, but to have somebody that puts it in perspective long-term. How is this going to affect my long-term goals? Not looking at what I did year-to-date, not looking at what I did last month. How did I perform the last 2 months? Because the thing you'll hear, and it rings true, past performance is not indicative of future results. Just because somebody did super well last month or super well last year does not mean they're going to do super well next month or next year. Doesn't mean they won't, but doesn't mean they will either. But so if you can put in perspective what you need to do to get where you need to go, then as long as you're inside those guidelines, it really doesn't matter what the overall market does, and it really doesn't matter what your portfolio does in comparison to the market. What you should be comparing yourself to is what you need to do to get to those long-term goals. So we're going to take our first break there, and we'll be back to talk a little bit more about long-term goals, about investing, about the CARES Act, about coronavirus, how it's all affecting you. If you have questions that we haven't covered this week, please drop me an email, bo@pfgwm.com, or visit investingsimplifiedradio.com and leave your question there. This is Investing Simplified.
Are you concerned about your retirement income? Do you really understand how your Social Security benefits work? Price Financial Group Wealth Management has helped many seniors in Oregon and Washington maximize their Social Security benefits at retirement through using their Social Security seminar on demand. Now you can watch this valuable information in the comfort of your home by just going to www.pfgwm.com and click on the free Social Security kit. If you are serious about your retirement planning, you cannot afford to miss this opportunity. After all, you have invested your hard-earned dollars into Social Security all your working years. So shouldn't you get the maximum return you can get from those dollars? The future can be scary. And without a plan, it can be even scarier, especially when facing the unknown. What you don't know can hurt you. Get your free Social Security kit at pfgwm.com or call 503-253-3000.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thanks for sticking with us today as we try to power through and find our new normal as we hope to open the country soon or open the state and be able to be back with you. So I wanted to answer some questions that I've had come in over email. And if you'd like to send your own question in, just a reminder, you can send it to Bo, that's B-O, at pfgwm.com. If you send that question in, I'd certainly love to cover the questions that have been keeping you up at night. And I had a caller call in that we spoke on the phone this week, and he said the other thing is these are questions that maybe he didn't think about, and he enjoyed hearing the questions that people have that are out there and maybe makes you think about it and make you learn about it a little bit. But one of the questions that I've had that we've gone over this week with clients is has to do with IRA distributions because of the CARES Act. Now, the big thing we've talked about, and we've talked about it before, RMDs, your required minimum distributions, are not required in the year 2020. So if you inherited your IRA before December 31st, 2019, and you're under the what are called the inherited IRA or beneficiary IRA rules, you do not have a required minimum distribution this year. If you are over age 70 and a half, and turned age 70 and a half before the end of December 2019, then you had required minimum distributions starting at that age. You do not have a required minimum distribution this year in year 2020. However, if you are over age 70 and a half, turning 70 and a half this year and are subject to the new CARES Act, or not the CARES Act, excuse, yeah, the CARES Act, excuse me, the required minimum distributions starting at 72, and you're turning 72 this year, or you think you had a required minimum distribution, you do not have a required minimum distribution this year. So all of that is sort of a long-winded way of saying there are no required minimums due this year. So if you are that person, though, that has inherited the IRA after December 31st, 2019, and they changed the rules on those required minimum distributions. So as a reminder, if you inherited the IRA prior to the end of last year, then you have required minimum distributions spread out over your lifetime. You can access those if you just go on Google and Google required minimum distributions beneficiary IRAs. You can go to the IRS website and see what your required minimum distribution is based on your lifetime. And the way they calculate that is they calculate it based on the value at the end of last year. And then there's a divisor based on your age, and you take that value divided by your age, and that's the amount that you have to take out by the end of the year. Of course, this year they've dropped that. Now you don't have to take anything out, which is pretty great. It helps save some taxes possibly this year. You can still take it out if you need the money, but you don't have to. Now, if you've inherited that IRA after December 31st of last year, so if you inherited it in the last couple of months, first of all, very sorry for your loss, but you don't have required minimum distributions. You actually have a 10-year period in which you'll have to take all of the funds out of that IRA. So once you take all the funds out of that IRA over the 10 years, then you're done. You can take it all out in 1 year. You can take it all out in 10. You could take out 10% a year and spread it over the 10 years. So that doesn't really apply when they've talked about suspending the required minimum distributions for this year. That doesn't apply if you inherited the IRA this year. It also doesn't apply to spousal beneficiaries. So here's a big thing that a lot of people don't know about IRAs and about inheriting IRAs. And this also applies to Roths, actually. If you're a spouse of the deceased, again, I'm very sorry for your loss, but you have the option to take it as a spousal IRA, meaning you can turn it into your own IRA, and that way you can take those required minimum distributions based on your lifetime. This can be particularly beneficial if you're younger than your spouse who passed away, because then you don't have to take RMDs if you're under 72 and a half, or excuse me, under 72, no half. It can also be very beneficial if you're significantly younger than your spouse who passed away. So if you are a spouse that is under 59 and a half, this could be a problem though, right? So if you inherit the IRA, your husband or your wife passes away, and you're under 59 and a half, and you do this spousal IRA, you turn the IRA into your own IRA, that means you can take out withdrawals based on your lifetime. But if you're under 59 and a half, then you're maybe going to have an early withdrawal penalty. Now, you won't have an early withdrawal penalty this year, because that's another thing that Congress enacted a couple weeks ago with the Coronavirus Relief Act, is that you can, with the CARES Act, not the SECURE Act, I get those, you know, those acronyms so confused, because they just have acronyms for everything. But if you inherit your IRA this year as a spouse and you're under 59 and a half, there's no early withdrawal penalty. There's no early withdrawal penalty if you're under 59 and a half and removing dollars from your IRA. But as a spouse in other years, years outside of when the coronavirus relief happens, if you inherit that IRA and you're under 59 and a half, what we've done for a lot of our clients that have this situation is we have them, the spouse is the only one who can do this. You take your deceased spouse's IRA, you convert it into an inherited IRA or a beneficiary IRA in which there is no early withdrawal penalty. So as long as you're within 10 years of turning 59 and a half, so let's say a 57-year-old widow inherits her husband's IRA, but she needs money out. So we put her money, we took that IRA and we rolled it into a inherited IRA. Now, at the time, she had required minimums. Now she would just have a 10-year stretch period. But she could take a little bit of money out, take some money out if she needed it. No penalty. You do have to pay the taxes on it, but no penalty. And then once she turned 59 and a half and now could access the money but wanted to not have to have required minimums, or now with the CARES Act, or excuse me, the SECURE Act, we want to make sure she doesn't have to stretch it over the 10 years. Once she hits 59 and a half, now we take that IRA and we turn it into her spousal election. You can still do that. And so now that IRA is her own IRA, so she doesn't have to take it out within the 10 years. So conceivably, we had 2 years where she could take it out what she needed to, and then after the 2 years, she turns 59 and a half. Now, she has to take the money out when she needs it. There's no required minimum. There's no 10-year stretch. And then once she hits age 72, she'll have a required minimum distribution, but it gave her a lot more flexibility. So the big thing that you can take from that, folks, is when you are inheriting an IRA, there are options, there are different strategies to use, and there are a lot of pitfalls. You definitely want to make sure that you're working with an advisor, you're working with a professional to get that figured out. If you've inherited an IRA, or your spouse or a family member or someone is leaving you money and you don't know what to do with it, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. I can walk you through that strategy we just talked about. We'll walk you through other strategies that are out there to help make sure you are tax smart with it. And then you can take that and go on your merry way. Now, if you want to work with us and have us help you do it, we're happy to do that. But worst case is you'll get that information. You can also pop me an email, bo@pfgwm.com, if you want to get that information over email. So the other big thing that changed when, you know, the IRS has come out and said we pushed back tax deadline. A lot of folks know that because tax day was this week, right on the 15th. So when we pushed back the tax deadline, you didn't actually have to file by April 15th, either in the state of Oregon or federally. So you got to push back to July 15th. Now, the cool thing that comes with that is your contribution deadline actually pushed out as well. So for both your IRA and for your SEP IRA. So what I've come across several times with clients who are small business owners, and if you're a sole proprietor, you don't have any employees, you may want to set up a SEP IRA or a Simplified Employee Pension Plan. So a SEP IRA has a lot of the same rules as an IRA except for the contribution limits. As an employer in a SEP IRA, so you are the employer if you're sole proprietor, if you're a single person owned business, you can put 25% of your earned income. It's actually 20, but it works out to be 25. But you can put a larger portion of money away tax favorably than you can in just a regular IRA. So if you recall, the regular IRA contribution limits are $6,000 or $7,000 depending on your age. But if you're a sole proprietorship, your net income for the year was $100,000 in 2019, you can actually put $20,000 into that SEP, and then you can write that off. And now that goes into your SEP IRA. It's like a homemade 401k, but it's much less expensive than setting up your own 401k plan. Now, some of you might be thinking, wait, Bo, you said I could put 25% away, and $20,000 isn't 25% of $100,000. But if you think about it this way, you put $20,000 away. Now your net income was actually $80,000. $20,000 is 25% of that $80,000. So that's how that works. If you start with your net profit number and you put away one-fifth or 20% of that, then it works out to be that will be 25% of what you're ending up filing on your taxes. But that can save you a lot of money if you are a business owner and you are owning your own business, or if you're a 1099 contractor. That's the other thing that a lot of people don't realize. If you are a 1099 contractor and you can file your own taxes and you do a Schedule C, so even if you work for somebody else, if you're a subcontractor working construction, if you don't think you own your own business but you're just operating as a 1099 contractor, an independent contractor, you can set up a SEP IRA for your business and end up stashing a lot of that money away and conceivably reducing your taxes. Now, it may not be the right option for you, and you may not be able to get above that $7,000 limit anyway if you're not making enough money, but it's an option that's out there that a lot of people don't know about. They think they have to have a work plan or a work-sponsored plan, or they have to own a business with a lot of employees to set up a retirement plan, and you can actually set up a retirement plan very easily with that SEP IRA, and you can set it up with a broker, you can set it up with a financial advisor, you can set it up with the bank and do it just into a savings account to get it done. Just like an IRA or a Roth IRA, you can set those up very easily and run it yourself. And the great thing is you can actually also do an employee contribution to the SEP, you know, because you can do an employer's contribution and then you can do your own IRA contribution, because a SEP and an IRA are basically interchangeable other than you have a lot larger amount that you can put into a SEP. So it can be a really good option to help save some money on taxes, because Lord knows I don't want to pay any more taxes than I have to. I've been over that a couple of times here. We want to make sure that you are taking care of yourself. So if you want to learn about a SEP IRA, if that might fit your situation, if you want to learn about how to take advantage of these rules, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. It's no obligation consultation to sit down and talk about whether these options might work for you. We're doing phone appointments. We're doing virtual appointments. We are not yet doing in-person appointments, at least until we've gotten the guidance from the governor and from the medical professionals that it's safe to do so. So I'm going to take a break there, and we'll be back with more Investing Simplified.
Hello, this is Kevin Stege, shareholder with Baker & Coulson Certified Public Accountants, serving the Portland and Southwest Washington areas for almost 40 years. We are a full-service accounting and consulting firm offering our services to a wide range of business and individual clients. One of the largest expenses to a household or a business is its tax burden. While off-the-shelf tax products can help file simple returns, they can't know your plans for the future and not only provide insight and planning to help you get there, but actually help you along the way. There are just some things that can't be replaced by experience. Whether you are just beginning your working career or have a well-established business with many employees, rely on the professionals at Baker & Coulson to help in an efficient, accurate, and personalized manner. We're located at 2414 Northeast Division in Gresham and can be reached at our website at bakercoulson.com or 503-666-5569. That's bakercoulson.com, 503-666-5569. And remember, at Baker & Coulson, our service is the product our clients remember most.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. If you're just now tuning in, thanks for joining us. I'm talking about some questions that I've been getting from listeners, from clients, as we navigate through this crazy market that we've had in this crazy time when we have these unprecedented, you know, climate, unprecedented times with this virus that's, you know, been racking the nation, racking the world. And so one of the things that people have been asking about is, if I'm in cash, if I have money sitting on the sidelines, when is the time to jump in? When is the right time to buy in? And it's really hard to know. It's really hard to know when the bottom was, when the market is turning around. But if you've been sitting on some cash, if you're thinking about buying in, if you've identified those companies that you want to own, I am a big, big believer in what's called dollar cost averaging. So if you don't know what dollar cost averaging is investing a certain portion of your investable money over time. You have a built-in dollar cost average if you've been participating in a 401k plan. So in a 401k plan, every 2 weeks or maybe every month, you have money going in and getting deposited, and it's automatically buying at your allocation. So you have a built-in dollar cost average. So on the dollar cost average, that means that you're getting a lower average price per share. So generally speaking, if the market's going down, then you're buying at lower and lower prices, but you don't have to worry about, oh, I bought at the wrong time. And if it's going up, then you're buying along the way. So the big thing is you're not really trying to time the market and getting it wrong. So when folks ask me, hey, I've got some money sitting on the sidelines, when should I buy? When should I invest? I tell them it totally depends on your particular situation, what you're buying, but it always makes sense to me. I'm a big believer in dollar cost averaging. Don't do it all at once. Don't jump in at once because you're going to regret it one way or the other. Whether you missed out on it because you got the wrong time or whether you're waiting for a certain price point. Anytime that you're buying individual companies, I think it makes sense to dollar cost average in. That's why 401ks work so well, I think, is because you're dollar cost averaging. So another question that people say, hey, if I'm in a 401k and I'm trying to dollar cost average in, or if I'm making moves, when should I do it? And I would caution you to be really careful about being super tactical in your 401k, because a lot of 401ks have rules about how often you can buy in or buy out. And so if you're moving to a stable value fund, which right now pays a whopping, I think, like 75 basis points, maybe. If you're moving into that stable value fund because you've been afraid of the market volatility, and now you're ready to get back in, be aware that a lot of those 401k funds don't let you to day trade. They don't let you get in and get out and get in and get out. And one of the big reasons is they're trying to control the fund flow so they can keep the 401k running. So if you're thinking about jumping in and jumping out inside your 401k, I would caution you not to. I would caution you to have a specific strategic plan. And there's a reason, you know, there's a study that U.S. News and World Reports did a few years ago. And I was talking to Kevin about this, I think, sometime last year. But they studied and they said, you know, if you look at the S&P 500 over time, or you look at the average institutional investor over time, or the average investor that when they're working with an advisor, when they're looking for growth type, you know, investments, the average, the worst performing investor is the individual 401k investor. So in the market, the S&P 500 has done, you know, 7.5% to 8% long-term average. Depending on when you start and when you look at it, could have done 8 or 9. But the average investor in their 401k plan does about 3, an average return. And the reason that they do is because they're trying to get in and get out, and they make the wrong decision a lot. They're trying to get in and out a lot. And so the funny thing is, even if you bought in, and I've talked about this before, even if you bought in to the S&P 500 at the exact wrong time back in the financial crisis, you bought in at the peak before it went down. If you bought in at the exact wrong time and held on to that, you held on to that fund up until recently, then you still more than tripled your money, even at the exact wrong time, which is crazy to think about, right? You got in at the exact wrong time. If you got in at the exact right time, then yeah, you're killing it. But the point is, you can't time the market. You can't make it right. You can't make the right call all the time, because then you have to be right both on the in and on the out. And you don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. You don't know when the coronavirus is going to come. You don't know that we're going to have nearly all the jobs that we've added since the Great Recession. You don't know that those are going to go away in a three-week period. That's how many jobs we've lost in the last 3 weeks due to this, because of this medically induced coma that we've been in because of the coronavirus. We've lost basically all the jobs. Not quite. We need another 60,000 or so, I believe, in order to go back down to where we were at the end of the financial crisis. So if you don't know that's happening, then it behooves you to not try and time the market, to not try and go in and out, to not try and buy into the stable value and get back in. Because in reality, when you watch the actual returns of people that say they did that and say they're perfect market timers, they're not much better than the person who just bought it and held on long term. That's why you hear people like Susie Orman, you hear people like Dave Ramsey, who talk about buying and holding for the long term, because it's really the way to go when you're talking about stock market investing. Doesn't mean you can't be tactical. It doesn't mean you can't have strategic plays. You can't get out of the way as the markets go down and that, you know, try to make moves that are smart. But you try not to be too timing friendly, because the real reason you make money in the market over time is by having time in the market. So that behooves, you know, brings up the question, what if I can't stand that volatility? Well, like I talked about before, maybe you need to reevaluate your risk tolerance and reevaluate what kind of volatility that you can take. And if you can't take any volatility, there are options out there. The stable value fund in your 401k is one of them. But you've got to be willing to give up that potential upside if you're in the stable value fund, right? You got to be able to give up the fact that you're not going to go up when the market's up 30% like it was in the year 2019. You're not doing that. You're doing 3%, right? You got to be happy with that. Or even if you're being more tactical and you're being more conservative in your overall investing profile, when the market's up 30, maybe you're only up 12 or 15. And when the market's down 30, you're down 10. And that's what you need to be aware of and be ready for, because that's what you're planning for. Now, you say to me, well, CDs are safe. And absolutely they are. They're a safe way to lose money, right? Because you're just not getting paid anything right now. Savings accounts, even online savings accounts right now, I think the best that you can find is going to be like 1%, maybe 1.5% online. You know, those are safe. And they're liquid and they can make money. There are other options out there that participate in the upside of the market and have guaranteed floors. There are guarantees that you can get, but there are trade-offs when you look at those guarantees. You can utilize insurance products. You can utilize CDs. You can utilize buffered ETFs. There are a lot of different things on the market right now that have really good properties that can take that volatility out for you. If that's the case, and you want to explore that, give our office a call, 503-253-3000. We can talk through the different strategies, the different products that we use that might be a fit for you. And the best thing about them is they can give you that retirement fill-up. They can make you feel more comfortable. They can make it so you're not worried. We've had a lot of clients that have had to reevaluate their risk tolerance because they thought they could take more risk. They thought they could stand the volatility. But when the volatility actually comes, they realize that they don't have the stomach for it. And if we can take some of that volatility away, if we can insure, hence the word insurance, and it's not an insurance show, and I don't want to talk about it purely as an insurance show, but if you can make sure that we can take away some of that volatility, some of that worry, then wouldn't that be great? The other thing about it is when you're taking money in retirement, when you're taking income off of your portfolio, if the market's down 10, even though you're being conservative, you're only down 10, but you're taking a 5% withdrawal from your overall portfolio. If you're down 10 and you're taking 5% out, now you're down 15. So you want to make sure that you have a bucket that you can draw from. You want to make sure that you have an ability to sustain that retirement withdrawal. You want to make sure that you do not run out of money and that you don't have to go and start a retirement job other than if you want to. And a lot of people have never taken the time to explore that, taking the time, because they're chasing these returns. They're saying, hey, the market is on fire. I need to get in there. I need to be making sure that I'm approaching that. And that's what you work with a financial planner, you work with a financial advisor for, is to build out that plan. How are we going to make sure that you don't run out of money? How are we going to make sure that you have a sustainable retirement, that you are able to retire on your terms and make it happen? And if your planner hasn't built that out for you, or you're still exploring it with them, I would bring it up. Make sure that they can do it. Or if you'd like a second opinion, because your planner has done that and you feel pretty good about it, but now that we've gone through this sort of national reset in the market and in your life, give our office a call, 503-253-3000, for that free complimentary second opinion. There's no obligation, folks. There's no, you know, high pressure sales. This isn't multi-level marketing. We're just trying to get that information out to you and make sure that you're not only staying safe in medical terms, but you're staying safe investment wise, right? That your nest egg is doing well. If you opened up that, you know, you open up your statement and you see 25% drop in your nest egg or 40% drop in your nest egg, know that it could go down another 40 or 50%. Is that something you're comfortable with? If not, give me a call. I'll talk to you about how we can combat that, how we can prevent that, how it might make sense. All right, we're going to take another break here, and then we'll be back with finishing up Investing Simplified.
Legal matters are never easy, but they are especially difficult when they involve the most important people and aspects of your life. This is Taylor Cattell, founding partner of KG Law Group. It's important to have an attorney who cares about your unique circumstances and knows how to get the outcome that is best for you. At KG Law Group, we specialize in estate planning and family law, including wills, trusts, powers of attorney, guardianship, and divorce. At KG Law Group, we provide both expertise and compassion as we guide you through the complex legal landscape. We balance knowledge of the law with exemplary client service. Whether you're reacting to a crisis or planning for the future, we are here to help. If you need legal advice, give us a call today and schedule a consultation at 503-878-8948. That's 878-8948. Or visit us online at kglawgroup.com. That's kglawgroup.com, serving Oregon and Southwest Washington. KG Law Group, your family, your legacy.
You're listening to Investing Simplified. Now, back to Bo Caldwell.
Welcome back to Investing Simplified. Thanks for listening as we try to close out this, well, I think we're in our fourth week of, you know, of coronavirus quarantine. And, you know, I was talking a little bit about the differences between having expectations in the market, expecting volatility, and I think we can expect the volatility to continue a certain extent, I think both to the upside and to the downside, which is a positive and a negative, right? But if you're thinking about how risky your portfolio is, to borrow a phrase, why don't we quarantine some of that risk? Why don't we look at, hey, can we reduce our risk in our portfolio without significantly sacrificing our potential returns? Can we make it so we are able to do that without increasing costs, without increasing crazy amounts of risk? Because the thing about financial planners and the thing about financial advisors and money managers is we're human, just like our clients. Just, we worry about when to get in, when to get out, how can we capture the risk. And a lot of things have happened in our industry where folks have felt like they need to beat the market. And that's what a financial planner should do, right? Beat the market. Except for the only way that a financial planner is going to beat the market is by taking more risk than the market on the upside. Now, we can beat the market on the downside by taking less risk, but then on the flip side, the market's going to go up and you're not going to beat it on the upside because you're not taking as much risk. That being said, it doesn't actually mean that taking more risk gets you more return, right? And so what your expectations should be from your planner in times like this, from your financial advisor in times like this, is open communication. When you call into their office, do they take the call? Or do they schedule time with you? Because maybe they're busy. They get a lot of calls coming in, and I can't always take calls from people when they just call in. But are they willing to schedule time? Are they willing to make the time for you to talk about your concerns? Right, to talk about what's important to you? Are they making sure you have ample liquidity? Have you reviewed the last time how much liquidity you need? How much do you have in your emergency savings account? How much do you have in cash? How much do you have in defensive bonds or treasuries or different things like that that can be less volatile so we can make sure that if the market continues to rocket up and rocket down, we can make sure your cash is available so we can make sure you can get your retirement income going on. And the, you know, the funny phrase that I always come back to is I'm not so much concerned about the return on my money as the return of my money. If that's something that applies to you, you're concerned about the return of your money, but have a little bit of concern about the return on your money. Maybe you want to make sure you explore some options out there that can get you that safe retirement income, maybe that safe increasing retirement income. But if we can make sure, if we could take a look at your situation and say, hey, I can tell you that we can get you to the same or better place in retirement that you were while you were working. Wouldn't that be something you'd want to explore? And how about we make sure we look out for any roadblocks that may pop up along the way? Because the thing is people are constantly underestimating the cost of medical costs in retirement. They are constantly underestimating the cost of long-term care. And you know what we're all underestimating in retirement is the risk of a black swan event like the coronavirus. So if we can take a portion of your portfolio and we can insure all that, then that gives you that much more leeway to go after those returns with the other part of your portfolio or your retirement account. It's always fun to own individuals' companies, folks. It's always fun to own stocks if you're thinking that, you know, volatility is fun, especially when it's to the upside, because when you see your account balance going up more than it's going at your bank, more than it's going in a savings account, yeah, that feels really good. But then the hard part is, are you willing to take what's going to go down? But if you had a portion, a core of your portfolio is defensive, is set to weather the storm. If you have an all-weather portfolio that is set to perform, to thrive, no matter what the market scenario, and you can rest easy knowing that your income needs are covered, then yeah, let's take some of that up and juice it up, right? Let's go find some other opportunities that might make us some real money. The problem is when you start talking to advisors and you talk to brokers out there, a lot of them will tell you, hey, we have this super safe investment and it's going to get you really great returns. And that's, of course, I'm talking about a lot of real estate investment trusts that are out there, particularly in commercial real estate or residential real estate, right? So they say, hey, look, I have this super safe investment that's paying 7 or 8 or 9% a year and it's really, really great and it's super safe. And you should put all your money in it. It's probably not that safe. And the broker is probably making 7 or 8% themselves on that sale to you. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't safe investments out there that can make 6, 7, 8%. There are. There are bonds that you can get, short-term notes. You can get structured notes. You can get market-linked CDs. There are fixed index annuities and fixed annuities out there that can provide stable, safe income or stable, safe returns, but you do have to give something up. And when we talk to people about those alternative options, when we talk to them about, you know, interesting options out there that may get some good returns while having a modicum of safety, there's always a trade-off, folks. So if you're talking about real estate investment trusts that are sold a lot based on the yield, so 7, 8%, this is what this earns off of you, ask the broker what they're getting paid. Ask the broker, what are the underlying investments in this REIT? Why is it paying so much? Because the way that I look at it is if two people go in to get a mortgage from the bank, then the bank says, you know, person A, I'm going to give you that mortgage and you have to pay 4% interest on that mortgage. But person B, you, sir, have to pay 9% interest. Why are they doing that? It's because person B is a higher risk. So a lot of times with these very high yielding products that are out there, these 10, 11% REITs, real estate investment trusts, these other things that offer these really, really high interest payments, or even these stock companies that offer these really, really high dividend yields, the reason is because they have to justify you investing in them. You have to have that risk-return trade-off, right? You have to be getting enough return in order to, you know, qualify being risky in there. So it's probably a lot riskier than you think. And it might be riskier than the broker is telling you. And you don't know what incentives they're getting or what options they're getting in there. When I was talking about the safe investment options we use, the insurance products, that's not an investment, really. It's an insurance product that has a guaranteed floor. And what we're giving up is potential upside, probably, right? Or we have to give up a time period. We have to give up liquidity. You got to give up something. There's no silver bullet out there, folks, that's going to get you this best return ever, along with no risk or, you know, super low risk. Now, it might give you good return with low risk, but it's about the risk-adjusted return you can get. And if you have a broker that's doing a lot of trades, if your advisor is doing a lot of different movements, it might be a good thing, it might be a bad thing. they might be trying to be tactical. We've made a good amount of trades in the last couple of months to try and keep our folks safer, to make our moves to get a little bit safer, a little bit more defensive. And as we start to dip back into the water, as the market starts to look better on a long-term perspective, we'll start making trades there too. But if they're just churning trades to make it look like they're doing something, that's a problem. If they're moving you in and out over time, that could be a really big problem, because if there are transaction costs, that might cost you more money. If you're working with a broker who's at a broker-dealer, who's not an independent fiduciary advisor, that may be costing you a lot of money. When we make trades for our clients, when we make moves, it doesn't cost our clients anything, because we are a fiduciary and we are looking out for them, and we're trying to make the moves so that they do better, because the better our clients do, the better we do, right? And that's both on the upside and the downside. So if they're doing a lot of crazy trading, trying to chase returns on the upside, or if they're doing it because they charge a commission for every trade, that could be a real problem, and that could really eat into your portfolio. Taxes, fees, commissions, all those things can really drive down your overall total return. The other thing to think about when you're exploring these high yielding options is a lot of times they behave more like stocks than you'd believe. So these high yield bonds, or if we're talking about high yield REITs, they move really fast, and a lot of times you can't get out of them. So a lot of these REITs that are sold are these privately held REITs, which are not a bad thing. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying REITs are terrible for a small portion of your portfolio, because it gets some yield. But you got to be willing to hold on to them. If you're going to do these privately traded REITs, you got to be willing and able to hold on to them possibly forever, because it's possible that you will never be able to get out of it unless you're willing to take pennies on the dollar. And if you're getting into these packaged products that these brokers have been selling with oil and gas exploratory companies, that's a real problem, because those companies are the ones that have been closing in on defaults. Those are the companies that have said, hey, we're going to pay these great dividends, although they're not really dividends, they're income payments, but they're going to pay these great income payments out to you. And then as soon as the price of oil goes down or they start defaulting on their other debts, what do you think is next? That dividend's going to get cut. And you can't bank on dividends from individual companies either. You know, you hear about these great dividend paying companies, these stocks that you could own, and those dividends might go down too. So the biggest thing is, when you're exploring these high yield options, because now that the cash doesn't pay anything, CDs don't pay anything, ask your broker, ask your advisor, what's the downside? Everything that we do, all the products that we use with our clients, all the investments that we have a downside, right? You got to give up something. You got to give up something to get what you're going. And the key is, are the pros outweighing the cons? And is your advisor willing to talk about the cons? Because everything has a con, right? Nothing is a perfect thing. There is no silver bullet. So make sure that you're exploring that with them, right? Make sure that you're exploring what you can do outside of the products they're offering. If they're going to say, hey, we only do this, maybe they're not the right advisor for you. If it doesn't feel right, don't do it. We're not the right advisor for everybody. I like to think that we are the best advisor out there. I like to think that we're the best at what we do, but doesn't mean that we're the right thing for everybody, right? So if you want to have that complimentary review, if you want to sit down with an advisor, if you want to just ping some ideas, if you have questions about the IRA, about the CARES Act, about the SECURE Act, about any of these options, any of these things we've talked about today, give my office a call, 503-253-3000, and I'll do my best to answer those questions for you. Leave a question on investingsimplifiedradio.com. Give us a shout. Drop me an email. Tune in next week. Hopefully, we'll be back in the studio live at you to take your calls on the air, because it's always more fun to take those calls on the air, and we're hoping to be doing that too. Thank you so much for listening. Please be safe out there. I'm cautiously optimistic that we're getting through this soon. Thank you so much for listening. God bless you all. Be safe out there. We'll talk to you next week. This has been Investing Simplified.
Financial Group Wealth Management.
Navigating through today's financial investment world can seem pretty scary. Now, here's the good news. Chuck Price, president of Price Financial Group Wealth Management, introduces a new revolutionary concept that will change how you invest now and in the future. It's called Asset Lock. Asset Lock monitors your investment accounts 24/7, 365, and alerts you when action needs to be taken. And now, Chuck Price offers Asset Lock. At Price Financial Group Wealth Management, we believe all our clients deserve to have Asset Lock monitoring their accounts. So call Chuck today or online at pfgwm.com and learn how you can get Asset Lock on your accounts today for free. Price Financial Group Wealth Management, because the smart investor knows what you don't know can hurt you.
Simplify.
Call 503-253-3000. That's 503-253-3000. You can listen to past shows of Investing Simplified or sign up for our free newsletter at www.pfgwm.com. This show was brought to you by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated, a registered investment advisor firm located at 555 Southeast 99th Avenue, Suite 103, Portland, Oregon, 97216, 503-253-3000, or 877-50-PRICE. Investing Simplified is a registered trademark owned by Price Financial Group Wealth Management Incorporated.